That's okay too. We're doing all right. Let me check with my technical. Okay, good. Everybody's listening, who is watching now, is hearing me, is seeing me. That's great. So again, happy festival to each and every one of you who are listening, who are participating one way or the other, to those who are here in Washington, D.C. President Kennedy said about this city, it has all the charm of a northern city and all the efficiency of a southern city. So he was kind of teasing the city. Actually, it's very impressive to be here. It's really beautiful in many ways. It's very, as I said, overwhelming to see what is here and the history that is here and the culture that is here. So we're going to soak up as much as we can while we're in this area. For that reason, our schedule is somewhat different than it often is during the feast, because we want to take advantage of the area where we are and give people the opportunity to learn and to grow in that way. But spiritually speaking is what's most important. So there'll be services straight on through. Services this evening, services, of course, in the daylight time of this holy day, and services all through this week, and of course, the weekly Sabbath in between, and all the, you know, and on the eighth day of sacred assembly, there'll be services aplenty. So we hope that you benefit from them, that all the messages will be edifying to everyone. We, as you noticed, we didn't sing hymns tonight here, but we are going to have hymns in the during the day on this first day of the festival. We do want to have hymns, and also on the eighth day of sacred assembly, we hope to have hymns then. So, you know, make a joyful noise. That may be all we can do. No, there are some talents here, we'll do that as well. I want, first of all of you who are here, especially those of you who are here, but even those of you who are at home, but who are here live watching me now, you know, give yourself, in a sense, a pat on the back, at least in the more metaphorical sense. You made it. You got to that first service. There's something about getting to that very first night of the festival, getting to the welcome. It's not something that everybody's able to do, and or that some people feel like they even want to push themselves to do. But it's really a wonderful tradition to have that first night, that welcome night that begins the festival. And I think it's just wonderful that there are people here and that there are people watching live on this first night of the festival. So as I said, a metaphorical tip of the hat to those of you who took the time and trouble and made the effort to be here in whatever shape you're in. I know some of you may be out of breath, maybe just rushed into the room just in time and turned on your computer or whatever you did to get here on time, but you did it. I understand that probably a lot of you had a lot of hassles before you got here. That right before these festival days, all kinds of things came up on the job or, with your family or whatever it is to distract you. But still, you made your plans. You know, you worked things out. You packed. You traveled. You got here. Or you set aside the time in your local area if you were not able to travel in order to be keeping this festival. So what I'm asking you to do is what Hawaiians traditionally ask people to do. They tell you when you come to Hawaii, you can come to Hawaii, but on the condition that you leave your cares behind on the mainland. And that's the situation I want here at this Festival of Tabernacles. Your troubles will still be there after these 8 days. They'll still be there. So for these 8 days, just leave them aside. Put them aside. Put them in God's hands. Get into the zone. Get into that festival attitude. As you'll see in a moment, we are commanded to rejoice at this time of the year. So let's try to fulfill that as best we can and think about the positive side as best we can. And I'll have more to say about that in a moment. First, I want to go to 1 John and talk about the positive side of this festival. 1 John 5 and verse 3. 1 John 5 and verse 3. For this is the love of God. As you know, if you're in a relationship, saying I love you is fine, but, you know, actions, do you really show love in the way you treat whoever it is? who is the object of that statement, I love you? Do your actions really show that? For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. And his commandments are not burdensome. He intended this festival to be a time of joy, reunion of families, reunion of friends, reunion of people with like minds, encouragement to those who share your beliefs and practices, an opportunity to learn and to grow, to learn about what is most important in life, the spiritual side of life, the goal of human existence, understanding God, his nature, and his plan for humankind, understanding the direction of history, so that you have peace of mind, understanding where human history is heading, and on and on I could go. So it's a very positive time. And so we are told, for this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. And we are commanded to keep these days, to keep this festival of tabernacles and the eighth day of sacred assembly. And if you think about the Psalms, there is a collection of Psalms that ties in with this season of the year. It connects to the pilgrimage people would make in ancient times, going up to Jerusalem to keep the pilgrimage festivals, particularly this festival of tabernacles. There are 15 of these Psalms. Think of them as beginning on the first day of the seventh month, the festival of trumpets, and Psalm 120. Really, the theme of that psalm is very much the theme of that festival of trumpets. Then we come to the 14th day of the seventh month, and that would have been during the day on the first day of the week, which has now ended. We're now in the second day of the week on God's sacred calendar, you know, and yet the first day is when most of us arrived at the festival site. So let's go to the 14th psalm of these 15 songs of ascents. Let's go to Psalm 133, the 14th of these songs of ascent. Shir Hama'alot, a song of ascents. Going up, going up. We're going up spiritually. And in those days, they went up spiritually and even geographically. To go to Jerusalem, you went up topographically, but it also was going up spiritually. So now we come to Psalm 133, the 14th day of the seventh month. How did you feel on Sunday when you arrived at the festival site? I know how we felt. Today I was together with my family. Almost everybody was here, and we were touring around. And my thoughts went back to earlier days when my children were younger, and we did a lot of these tourings. And I, you know, it was just very emotional for me. Memories come to mind of earlier years when we did the same thing. Now they're adults, they're grown up, and of course a couple of them are married and so on. I have a grandchild, and we're able to get together and do the touring and also see these things through the eyes of Gideon, Reuben, Rebecca's son, and my grandchild. So it's really very exciting. But anyway, in Psalm 133, and I know a lot of you have those same feelings at this time of the year as you renew your old friendships or with family or people who, at least even if you don't know them well, but there are people who share your beliefs and practices. So you're encouraged. You know, you may be the only one in your town who's a Christian and keeps these days. Then you come to a place where there are scores of others doing the same thing. Oh, I'm not so loony. There are other people who do this. Psalm 133, a song of ascents of David. Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious oil upon the head, running down on the beard of Aaron, running down on the edge of his garments. It is like the dew of Hermon descending upon the mountains of Zion, going all the way from the northern border of Israel to the central sanctuary. For there the Eternal commanded the blessing, life forevermore. So those were your emotions as you came to the festival site today. And now in the evening, you heard in the opening prayer, the psalm for this opening day of the festival, a song of ascents, Shir Hama'alot. Behold, bless the Eternal, all you servants of the Eternal, who by night stand in the house of the Eternal. Here we are. It's dark outside. It's night. The festival has begun, and you're in the house of the Eternal. All right, I realize this is not the Beit HaMikdash. This is not the temple, but this is the Eternal's house for the time being. Lift up your hands to this in the sanctuary and bless the Eternal. And then each one of you, each one of you, the God says this to each individual, the Eternal who made heaven and earth bless you from Zion. It was pointed out to me, you know, the translation makes it clear in the old King James that we, you know, most of us don't use, including myself. I'm reading out of a new King James. But one good thing about the old King James is that the pronouns preserve the translation a little more clearly. So it's plural until we get to the third verse. And then each and every one of you, the Eternal who made heaven and earth bless you, right? You, Pam, or you, Jane, you know, or you, Bruno, whoever's listening out there, or you in this room, right, each of you. The Eternal who made heaven and earth bless you from Zion. I want to give some reasons why, five reasons actually, that you know, I could probably come up with more, I would hope so, but five reasons why we should be keeping these festivals as Christians. We are Christian commandment keepers. We're under the new covenant. I was thinking, you know, that I grew up in the Jewish community, keeping Sukkot, keeping the festival of booths, not the festival of booze, although alcohol ought to be a part of it, yes, in moderation. Good food ought to be a part of it. It's a festival. It is a time for feasting, but it is a chag. What is a chag, a festival? A chag is, first of all, a time to go somewhere. You know, unfortunately, a real tragedy occurred. The Muslims were going to Mecca for what they call the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca, and there was some kind of stampede, and almost 1,000 people have died there, a real, very serious tragedy. But a chag is a time to go somewhere. Chag also is a time to get together, chug, in a circle. Okay, chag is also coming from the concept of chug, getting in a circle, you know, for socializing, for folk dancing, or just interaction in what we call a social circle. So in other words, it's a time to go somewhere and be with other people. And this is the situation here. You know, you go somewhere and you're with other people. So it's a festival. We are, as I mentioned, there are reasons why Christians keep God's commands under the new covenant and keep this festival as a part of our way of life, as a part of a culture that binds the church together internationally and historically with earlier generations and with future generations. We have a culture. Not only do we have moral principles to follow, but we also have a certain common culture within the church that binds us together as a community, as I said, across national lines and across timelines. So as I was saying, in my own memory, I kept the Festival of Sukkot, the festival of booths, or the festival of tabernacles, temporary dwellings, huts. We used to literally build a booth, a physical structure, and stay in it, have our meals in it. And I kept the festival in that way. However, this is the 48th time for me, the 48th time that I'm keeping the festival as a Christian. The 48th time that I'm keeping the festival as a Christian. And I'm really excited to announce that just recently there was a baptism in this congregation, and I want to announce it. Otis Nance in Portland, Oregon, is now a baptized member of God's church, and it's very inspiring. You know, here I'm keeping my 48th Festival of Tabernacles as a Christian. Now, he has been keeping the Festival of Tabernacles as a Christian, but now, you know, you could say it's official. It's done. The commitment has been made, and now he's a baptized member of God's church. And I want to publicly thank Jerry Pedersen, who is a minister of the Church of God Seventh Day. I was not able to get to Portland, Oregon. I live in Central Florida. I live in Kissimmee near Walt Disney World, and Otis was baptized in Portland. But we did have I did work it out with Jerry Pedersen of the Church of God Seventh Day to perform that ritual there. And so I just want to publicly thank him for that. And there are reasons why, as Christians, we should keep these festivals. Okay? Number one, they are God's festivals. They are God's festivals. He calls them Moadim, appointed times, and they are his. Now, he gave them to a group of people to keep, but they are not exclusively ethnic holidays. The 4th of July celebrates American Independence Day. And I guess if you wanted to celebrate it because you love America, you can do it. I think there used to be a custom that many people in Denmark would celebrate July 4th because they were very pro-American. But obviously July 4th is very American. But these days, although they're called Jewish holidays, they were given at first to the people of Israel, but they are God's days. I want to go to Leviticus 23. These Moadim, these appointed times, are God's appointed times. And in Leviticus 23, and the first verse is where I'm going to begin. Leviticus 23 and verse 1. And the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, the feasts of the Eternal, Moadei Adonai, the feasts of the Lord, the feasts of, or feasts of Yahweh." Nowadays, Hebrew speakers don't use that term anymore if they're religious. "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them," let me just go back to some background. In the time of Jesus Christ, the Jews did not call God by his personal name, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, YHWH, Yahweh, except once a year, the high priest on the Day of Atonement and the Holy of Holies pronounced it. That's the only time it was done. So that's just background. Anyway, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Eternal, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts." And look how he concludes the chapter speaking to Moses regarding this festival that we're commemorating tonight and for the next 7 days. "Also, on the 15th day of the 7th month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep the feast of the Eternal for 7 days. On the first day, there shall be a Sabbath rest. And on the 8th day is a Sabbath rest. And that, by the way, is a separate festival that's tacked on to the Festival of Tabernacles. If you read all the verses, it is the 8th day of Sacred Assembly, Shmini Atzeret, and it's really a separate festival. "And you shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of beautiful trees, branches of palm trees, the boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Eternal your God for 7 days." If you read Nehemiah 8, you find that he's telling them these are materials you can use to build your temporary dwellings and to decorate them. Go to Nehemiah 8 and you'll see that. And in those days, that would have been a very important way to keep the festival. Nowadays, we have temporary dwellings we can go to. We have all around the world hotels, motels, places to go. If you want to build a booth, that's fine. But you notice that when Jesus Christ kept the Festival of Tabernacles, no mention is made of the kind of dwelling he lived in. It just says he went to Jerusalem. There's no specific instructions about what type of temporary dwelling to utilize. In another part of the Bible, the term ohel is used, meaning tents. So a tent is not the same as a hut mentioned here. So as I said, the principle is a temporary dwelling. Verse 41. "You shall keep it as a feast to the Eternal for 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the 7th month. You shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths." That's the original command because it was given to that nation. But notice what's said here. "That your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths." It's interesting. He's talking to the Israelites, but he doesn't say that you may know that you had to dwell in booths. It's almost as if other people are eventually going to know about this. The whole world needs to know that about the Exodus. The whole world needs to know about the wandering in the wilderness. The Bible was given ultimately as a book that the whole world should have. And indeed, now it is spread around the world. In Orlando, Florida, where I live, there's a wonderful organization that translates the Bible into every conceivable language. They sent people into the villages of the developing nations, into small tribes, and the people somehow learned their language, learned their culture, risked their lives doing it and their health, and then translate the Bible into those languages. And so the Bible has been circulating all around. And so, as I said, the Exodus has lessons for everybody. It's a part of Israelite history, but it's also now a part of church history. And so he says, not that I made you dwell in booths, but know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths. It's not interesting how it's put. There's a little subtle point there, I think, that's being made. That your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Eternal, your God. Now look at verse 44. So Moses declared to the children of Israel the feast of the Eternal. Okay, so again, you see that very clear. So number one reason that we keep the festivals today is that they are God's festivals. Number two, Jesus kept them. You know, Jesus is our role model. He's our hero. And you know what? We all understand the role he played in his first coming. He was our sacrifice. He was the sacrifice par excellence. And you know what? You never see him in the Bible offering a sacrifice, because we don't have to do that. You don't see him in the Bible offering a sacrifice, but you do see him keeping the holy days. And I want to go to John 7. After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee. That's the northern part of Israel, because in the southern part, that was the base of the religious leaders, and they wanted to kill him. After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he did not want to walk in Judea, because the Jews sought to kill him. Now, the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was at hand, and as we understand, or not, I'm going to tell you, the Orthodox Jews still believe in literally building a booth, staying in a booth, and also in those days, as many as possible went to Jerusalem for the festival, and there were sacrifices and rituals that went on, and so this is the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles. John is letting us know that this is the Festival of Tabernacles that's kept by the Jews in those days, so we have all that historical background can be a part of our understanding when we read this material. His brothers therefore said to him, "Depart from here and go into Judea, that your disciples also may see the works that you are doing." They were skeptical of him, his own brothers at that point. "For no one does anything in secret while he himself seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world." For even his brothers did not yet believe in him. Continue on, please, as I read, verse 6. "Then Jesus said to them, 'My time is not yet come, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me, because I testify of it that its works are evil.'" You know, sooner or later, we do come into conflict with the prevailing culture if we're Christian. It's just inevitable. "You go up to this feast," he says to his brothers. "I am not yet going up to this feast, for my time is not yet fully come." I'm not about to be martyred, so I'm going to be careful when I go. I'm going to time it in such a way that I'm protected. He was able to go kind of undercover and get there and mingle with the crowd where they couldn't single him out and go after him. When he had said these things to them, he remained in Galilee. Verse 10, "But when his brothers had gone up, then he also went up to the feast, but openly, as it were, in secret." So he kept this festival at the risk of his life. Then the Jews, let me just jump now to verse 14. "Now about the middle of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught." So when he kept this festival, he didn't just keep the first day and then the eighth day of sacred assembly. In the middle of the feast, he got up and taught, which I hope to do. I hope to teach all through this week. And the people here expect to be attending services all through the week. So that's the example here, is that in the middle of the feast, he got up and taught. John 7:14. "Now about the middle of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught." So one reason to keep this festival as Christians is following the example of Jesus Christ, who kept them. Another reason to keep this festival is that they were never abolished or replaced. These festivals were never abolished or replaced. Okay, so let me see. That would actually be a third reason. First reason I gave is that they are God's festivals. Second reason I gave is that Jesus kept them. Now I'll give you a third reason. They were never abolished or replaced. I don't have to quote a verse, because there is no verse that does that. Hey, look through this Bible. Where's the verse that explicitly says These holy days ought to be, ought not to be kept, or ought to be replaced with another set of days. You won't find it. Okay? Now, a fourth reason to keep these festivals is that they remind us of important historical and prophetic events in the history of God's church. Critically important events. They remind us of critically important historical and prophesied events in the history of God's church. For example, in the spring, we keep the Festival of Unleavened Bread. It's called sometimes the Passover as a festival. Exodus 12. And let's go to verse 40. Well, I'm just going to summarize verse 40 so I don't get into the technicalities. Israel was in exile, in a sense, because they were living in a land that was not theirs. Then they came into Egypt and became not only exiles, but slaves. Finally, after that whole period of pilgrimage and slavery, they were released and brought back to the land, but this time as their promised land to inherit. Everybody okay with that? Follow that? So in verse 41, and it came to pass at the end of the 430 years on that very same day, and that's going back to the day that Abraham was circumcised. It came to pass that all the armies of the children all the armies of the Eternal went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night of solemn observance. The night that they left Egypt, the 15th day of the first month, the first day of unleavened bread, as we call it today, or the first day of Passover, as it's sometimes called. Of course, there is a New Testament Passover the night before, but that's, you know, for other reasons. It is a night of solemn observance to the Eternal for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Eternal, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations. So these days remind us of critically important events in the history of God's church and prophesied events yet to come. So that's another reason to observe these festivals. Now there's a fifth reason to observe them, is that these festivals remind us of God's plan of salvation. If by keeping these festivals, we rehearse the points of God's, what theologians call salvation history, God's plan of salvation, and it keeps us on track, understanding, as I said, keeps us stable spiritually, and from year to year increases our understanding of how God is working with human beings, what his purposes are, and how he intends to fulfill them, how he is fulfilling them. And I want to go to the book of Colossians, which I'll probably have more to say about tomorrow. I plan to. I say tomorrow in the secular sense, later this day from a biblical sense. I want to go to Colossians 2. These holy days, as I said, remind us of what is yet, of the various points in God's plan. So what's more important than the days is what God is doing. But the days help us remember what God is doing. So we the days are necessary for us, but they are only, in a sense, shadows of what God is really doing. And that's the essential part. And so that's why we don't quibble about the details of how to keep these days. Many of you are doing various things, let's be balanced about it, but let's at the same time not be judgmental about it. In Colossians 2 and verse 16, talking about Jesus Christ and his role, and he is the hero of the holy days. He is the essential character, personality of these days. He is the central figure, the hero of the holy days. Colossians 2:16. I first gave that title in a place called Corpus Christi, the body of Christ. I gave that as a sermon during the Festival of Tabernacles in Corpus Christi back in 1990. Anyway, Colossians 2:16. So let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbaths. As I said, if you want to build a literal booth, do it as long as you don't condemn me because I didn't. You want to stay at a 5-star hotel? Do that. And I'm happy for you. I'm happy you can do it. Because it is a temporary dwelling. You're only going to be there for a week, then you're going to go, or 8 days, then you're going to go back to where you normally live. And it's obviously temporary. You had a pack to get there. Maybe you left some things behind that you're going to have to purchase or do without, and so on and so forth. You know, it's obviously temporary. And you have that sense of temporariness when you're there. And that's the point. Verse 17, which are a shadow of things to come, but the substance is of Christ. So please keep in mind the substance of the days, but realize that the days are a shadow, and we need the shadow now because we don't have the full substance. You know, God hasn't finished his plan. We need to go over the plan, you know, until it's finished, and then we can rehearse it later about what God did. You know, we can review it once it's done. Right now it hasn't even been done. It hasn't even been finished. We can understand what has already been accomplished, and then we can look forward to what will yet be accomplished. Is that okay with everybody? So those are five reasons to continue to keep these festivals. They're God's festivals. Jesus Christ kept them. They were never abolished or replaced by any other set of festivals. And they were not abolished so that we would have no festivals. That would be kind of a dry culture, you know, way of life for the church to have only the weekly Sabbath and no other days through the year. And not only that, but we can go on to say that they remind us of important, critically important historical events and prophesied events in the history of the church. And fifthly, that they remind us of God's plan of salvation. And I want to say more about that over the next couple of days. And so I hope you'll be listening to those messages as we get into that. Now, it's very important once you get here, and I understand all of us have our concerns, but try as much as possible to just get into the, you know, what we used to call catch feast fever, to get into that frame of mind of wanting to really observe these festival days. We are literally commanded to rejoice. I want to go to Deuteronomy 16. We have summarized these, we Hebrew speakers, by saying, V'samachta b'chagecha v'hayita ach sameach. And you shall rejoice in your festival, and you shall surely rejoice. This is summarizing the verses I'm going to read. I would sing them to you, but you might want to run the other way. Reminds me of a minister that I knew who has since died, a man that was one of my teachers. You know, he talked about the music he says some of this music, some music, he loved classical music. He loved the what we might call the more serious music. And he said, that's the kind of music that sends me. And then he said, a lot of the kind of music you like sends me the other way. let's go to so I don't want to send you the other way by singing the song, but let's go to Deuteronomy 16 and verse 13. Deuteronomy 16:13. You shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days when you have gathered from your threshing floor and from your wine press. You shall rejoice, you know, and you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, and the Levite, the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates. So help people to enjoy the festival who may not be able to enjoy it as you do. 7 days you shall keep a sacred feast to the Eternal your God in the place which the Eternal chooses, because the Eternal your God will bless you in all your produce and in all the work of your hands, so that you surely rejoice. So that's what we're doing, or we're going to try to do it. And of course, the 16th verse reminds us at this time of year to bring offerings. So for the first day and the eighth day, I would recommend that, or more than that, the Bible will tell you to do it. Bring offerings for the first day and the eighth day, wherever you may be attending. But we are to be joyful. And I want to go to 1 Peter, the 5th chapter. Please, at this time of year, in your prayer life, talk to God and bring your concerns before Him, and try not to let them consume you during this week, whatever they may be for you. Try not to let them take away from your enjoyment of the festival. 1 Peter 5, and I'll start in verse 6. He says, therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon Him, for He cares for you. So let's, you know, be in that very positive frame of mind. Now, I've given a title to this first talk, this welcome message, and I call this message Assembling Ambassadors of the Awesome Age Ahead. This is really internationally a convention of the delegates, in a sense, of God's kingdom, the ambassadors of God's kingdom, those who are representing God's kingdom in this world. So we are in the world, but not of the world. We are, spiritually speaking, resident aliens. That's the title of a book by an ethicist named Stanley Hauerwas, who used to be at Duke University. I don't know if he's alive and well or what he's up to, but he used to be an ethicist at Duke University, and he wrote a book about Christians called Resident Aliens. And spiritually, that's what we are. But we are ambassadors for the awesome age ahead. And so we have now a convention internationally. One of the sites is here in Washington, D.C., and you know, you're welcome to come on down. If you know, you did, if you were not here for the first day, you can come for later, you know, later in the week. We'll still be here, God willing, you know. And so we are assembling ambassadors of the awesome age ahead, and we are so excited about that coming future time, that millennium, that 1,000 years of peace and prosperity. We're so excited about it that we're going to make a very strong effort to be in a positive frame of mind, excuse me, during this week, to help one another to be in a positive frame of mind, to be encouraging to one another, to serve one another, to strengthen one another. And so I want to go to Philippians. I want us to get in that zone, that festival frame of mind, to catch feast fever. I want to go to Philippians, excuse me, Philippians 4, Philippians 4. Philippians 4 and verse 4. It's easy to remember. 4:4. Philippians 4:4. Rejoice in the eternal always. Again, I will say, rejoice. And so you all know the song. God would like us to be joyful, even if our hearts lie panting on the floor. How much more should we be joyful when there's really something to be joyful for, right? So if you're supposed to rejoice all the time, how much more should you rejoice this time of year? See, I told you my singing might drive you the other way. Hang in there. We're almost finished. Philippians 4, verse 4. Rejoice in the eternal always. Again, I will say rejoice. And then we come to verse 8. How are we going to have a wonderful festival? By focusing on Philippians 4, 8, which is one of the hymns that we sing during the festival, as some of you know. Kind of a theme song of the festival for us. Philippians 4 and verse 8. Finally, brethren. Whatever, there are seven wonderful points here to think about. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. So keep this verse in mind during these 8 days. And it will help you to do what we're supposed to do, which is to rejoice during this time of the year. So welcome to the Festival of Tabernacles 2015. We are assembling ambassadors of the awesome age ahead. I'd like to thank you, for those of you who have tuned in live, and those of you who are here, and those of you who tuned in live, and those of you who are watching some other time, I'm grateful you're doing that, even if it's after the festival, as I said, to learn more about the festival you just observed. That's fine, too. However, for those of you who want to keep up with our schedule, it is on our website, and we do have services tomorrow on the Holy Day at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and then for the next 4 evenings, we're at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. So those of you on the West Coast, about 5 p.m., those of you who are in Iowa, I guess that means 7 p.m. there, if you want to be watching us live. And then on the Sabbath, we'll go back to a 3 p.m. time, which is what a lot of you are used to, who watch us on the Sabbath, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And then Sunday morning is a special situation. It's a special day. It's the seventh day of the festival, and it's a special situation. There I'm going to be part of a go-to-meeting kind of setup with a group meeting in Iowa. And so I'll be doing a service at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 9:30 in Iowa. Did I say p.m.? Ah! I'm sorry. Okay. No, it's p.m. now, but that service will be 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time, 9:30 a.m. in Iowa. And it will be handled as a kind of go-to-meeting kind of setup. And so we'll have more information on the website about it. But as far as I understand, if you go to a website, thinkgod.org, you'll have the information about how to connect with us. thinkgod.org, but we'll have something on the website before Sunday. And then on Monday, the holy day, we're once again going to have services at 3 p.m. On the eighth day of Sacred Assembly, the final holy day of the holy day season. So that's an overview, which you can also read on the website. So again, congratulations to Otis Nance on his becoming a full member of God's Church, and congratulations to all of you who are serving God by keeping this festival. And we wish you a Chag Sameach, a wonderful, happy festival. All the best to you and yours.